I'm Fresh, and you are now listening to The Breaks Podcast. These are highlights from our Saturday night hip-hop show on KUTX 98.9 in Austin, Texas. My co-host Confucius Jones and I are native Austinites, and we love talking hip-hop. Texas hip-hop, hip-hop history, and what's going on right now. And just so you know, the opinions expressed in the podcast are our own and do not necessarily reflect the position of KUTX Austin.
We here to take over the airways.
So, I think it was yesterday or today. No, it was yesterday. This was yesterday. Yesterday, I was scrolling through Twitter, as I do on most days, and I saw where Young Thug had some rather, I won't say rather, but he had some disparaging remarks about Andre 3000. Now, the headline said that Young Thug couldn't name two Andre 3000 songs. And I was like, this guy's never listened to Outkast. He's from Atlanta. Like, you've never heard an Outkast song. So Young Thug was the guest on T.I.'s Expeditiously podcast. I didn't listen to the entire podcast. I will be listening to it, though, because I do want to hear the full conversation. But somehow, Andre 3000 became the topic of discussion. And T.I. pointed out that Young Thug needs to work with Andre 3000. They would work well together. And I've kind of thought that, too, for a minute. Like, you know, I think Andre and Young Thug would work well together. Young Thug and Andre 3000 song would sound good. In theory, on paper, it would sound great. That would be a great collab. And T.I. was pointing out, like, whatever you doing next, your next big thing, you need to get Andre on a song. You need to, just like you went and you worked with Elton John, you need to work with Andre. And Young Thug replied with, like, I ain't never paid attention to that dude ever in life. Which was a contradiction, because after saying that, T.I. was like, man, what he was like, you need to work with him just like you went and worked with Elton John. And Young Thug went on to talk about how it's a difference between working with Elton John and working with Andre 3000. And he exclaimed that working with Elton John was, Elton John is a brown noser and Andre wants to be brown nosed. Meaning, he felt like when he met Elton John, Elton John was into him and was nice and was greeting him and was very welcoming. It was like, hey, man, how's the song going? I love the album. I love what you're doing, man. I love the work. You know, what are those guys over there doing? I like what they're doing over there. But Andre, on the other hand, wants you to kind of bow down to the greatness of him instead of him being welcoming and welcoming you with open arms. Now, I don't know that to be true. I've never met Andre 3000. I've never met Elton John. But I imagine Elton John is a diva. I imagine Elton, the great Sir Elton John, is a diva. I imagine that. I imagine he's Diddy on steroids. Like, I imagine he's 100 times more than what ever Diddy is. And I've heard a lot of stories about how eccentric and demanding Diddy is when it comes to working with him in the studio. So I imagine that to be what Elton John is. Andre, not so much. Maybe it's because it's the guy who randomly pops up on verses. You never know he's gonna be on a verse. He just pops up on one, whether it be Frank Ocean, Rick Ross, DJ Unk and Walk It Out, or Usher or something. Like, that's Andre. Or, you know, he just ends up on an Anderson .Paak album. Or he ends up, like, rapping alongside longtime friends, the Goody Mob. So, and Andre's this guy that you just see randomly places. And Young Thug was like, well, you know, Andre, you know, he the type where, you know, you got to call, you talk to his secretary, and the secretary is just like, no, he's not available, you know, he can't do that. And that told me everything that I needed to know. For me. I don't know the full extent of Young Thug and Andre 3000's relationship, but as I said earlier, him sitting up and saying, I ain't never paid attention to that dude ever in life, is a contradiction, because you say you haven't paid attention to him or you're not attention to him, but you wanted a verse. You reached out and you got whoever his representation was, which I would imagine Andre still has representation. Man still acting, man still raps, man still jumps on verses or whatever. So I feel like you took that encounter and just applied it to everything about the man. And T.I. tried to explain to him and tell him emphatically, like, no, man, that dude is here for us. He's an advocate. He's an advocate for us. And Young Thug was not buying it. It was like, he an advocate for who? And he was like, who he advocating for? He was like, man, nah, I don't believe that. And T.I. was like, no, he one of us. He one of us. And Young Thug wanted to ask T.I., well, if he's so great, why you don't rap like him? Why you don't talk like him? Why you don't dress like him? And in my mind, I was like, but you do. You do, Thug. You talk like, you rap similar to Andre. You definitely dress in that manner, like in that realm of him and CeeLo. Like, you weren't the first rapper, male rapper, to put on a dress, bruh. Like, we saw Andre do that first. We had already seen this when you did it. You were a little more flamboyant with yours, but all of the wild, flamboyant, eccentric things in rap, especially from Southern rap, we've seen it come from Andre or CeeLo or just Dungeon Family, period. We've already seen it. So his impact is there. You may feel away because the man didn't give you a verse, but his imprint is on you already. His influence is there already. And he's influenced a lot. Some would argue, and I could definitely argue, that the Love Below inspired 808s and Heartbreak, or inspired the sound that Kid Cudi has. Like, his imprint in hip hop and music and in the culture is there, and it's clearly on you. But you feel some way because maybe your idol or somebody you idolize or somebody you was a fan of, you wanted to work with, you reached out and wanted to work with, and you didn't get a chance to do that. So now you feel like Andre is an a-hole and he don't really represent you, and he's not really down for the culture. And I also heard, like, saw people arguing, was like, you know, Andre has talked down on younger rappers before on several times, on several occasions, but I've never seen that. I seen where he big Young Thug up in Complex when being interviewed by Complex, I think in like 2017, 2016, somewhere around that time frame. And he said Young Thug was like amazing. This isn't a direct quote, but he said he was amazing. He loved what he was doing. So I'm confused as to what happened. Like, like I said, I don't know the extent. I don't know what was said. But I feel like Young Thug took that encounter or lack thereof and just ran with it. But I think if he sat down with, if he ever gets a chance to sit down with Andre, that he'll feel totally different about that. So, like, I don't know, man. It was hard to hear that. And maybe, you know, you root for and you cape for people who you are a fan of. And I'm a fan of Outkast. I'm a fan of Andre. So I just wasn't going to just sit there and just be like, nah, yeah, Andre's an a-hole to all of these younger rappers, and he don't really like younger rap Atlanta. And he probably doesn't like it when people keep comparing any rap duo to him and Big Boy and just saying, oh, no, they're two Andres, and that's not Outkast, as we spoke about on this show before. So he probably has a way with that. And Andre has kind of had a love-hate relationship with rap in the past few years. I think, like, just last year or 2018, the man was sitting there saying, he said, I don't remember who he did the interview with, but he was saying how he felt about how music, and he kind of didn't feel like what he had to say would be relevant to what the younger people want to hear. Or, you know, he was afraid to rap because he didn't think people wanted to hear what he had to say. And maybe that was that time that Young Thug reached out to him. He was where Andre was feeling that discourse with rap and with the culture, that, man, this kid want to work with me and I would love to work with him, but I don't think what I have to say on any song he sends over, he's going to like, or anybody else is going to care about what I'm saying on the song. So that could be it. I don't know. But I find it hard to believe that the most random guy in hip hop just didn't want to, just blew you off and just didn't want to work with you. Maybe he never got the message. People, you know, people's secretaries mess up. You know what I'm saying? So maybe that's it. But I would love to hear what Andre has to say about it, but Andre, I don't really see him saying anything about it anytime soon. If he does, he'll probably bring it up in whatever surprise verse he has next. Because I'm sure he's found out about it. And I'm sure Big Boy heard about it. I'm sure Big Boy has something to say, but probably won't say anything either. How do I say this? How do I do this? How do I frame all this? So there's a new-ish app going around titled Clubhouse. It's still in beta. It's like invite only. Somebody would have to invite you to the app to use the app. But it started out as like venture capitalists, and, you know, getting on there and having a space to talk. You know, the guy who started it is a venture capitalist and invited other venture capitalists on the app to talk business, network, all this good stuff, all these things that social media really is supposed to be, or a social networking site is supposed to be. So, but as usual, and normally what will happen is that the app will spread, or word of mouth info about the app will spread, and, you know, this person invites this person, that person invites this person. You get like a certain amount of invites. Clearly, I think everybody gets a certain number. I got like 4 left, but clearly other people didn't get as many as I had. I don't know how that happened or how that went down. But anyway, so it ended up being like more notable people with a bigger notoriety ended up on there. But then, once again, like I said, you know, this person invites that person, this person invites 3 people, those 3 people invite another 2, 3, 4 people onto the app. And so it's growing. Excuse me. Like I said, it's still in beta. So, but the great thing about this app is just all audio. It's just you in different rooms talking, having conversations about whatever that room's conversation is about. So, with all that being said, also, Kevin Hart has a new stand-up out, Zero F's Given. It's now streaming on Netflix. This was a very hot topic yesterday, and I think probably still today in some rooms on Clubhouse, in some area of Twitter. So, there was a room on Clubhouse on this app started to talk about how Kevin Hart is not funny. Now, I've been hearing this since Kevin Hart has come out. I like to think and believe that comedy is a spectrum. Like, everybody's not going to like everything that a comedian does. Everybody's not going to like every form of comedy. Some people like stand-up. Some people like comedic actors. Some people like sketch comedy, et cetera, et cetera. So, I've been hearing that Kevin Hart isn't funny. I personally think Kevin Hart is funny. Is every stand-up bust your gut, laughing funny, leave you with tears in your eyes? No. But there's a lot of comedians that every stand-up they do isn't just like that. Mike Epps, for me, is not that guy. Like, I've never seen a Mike Epps stand-up where I, like, at the end of it, I was crying laughing. Or at any part of it, I was crying laughing, my stomach hurt. All that. It's just not that guy for me, stand-up-wise. Great comedic actor, but stand-up-wise, he just hasn't done it for me. But anyway, that's beside the point. It's a whole tangent. On this app, Clubhouse, as I said, this room was created to discuss how Kevin Hart isn't funny, and it was surrounding his new stand-up, and certain jokes were discussed within the stand-up by just random people who started a room. So, Kevin Hart is also on Clubhouse. So, I guess he sees the room and he jumps in the room. Now, before he jumps in this room, everybody's in there saying how he's not funny. They slandering the man. In this case, it would be libel because it's spoken. Oh, well, no, it would be slander because it's audio. It's all being spoken. I'm sorry. But everybody's in there going at him, cracking jokes about him, about his stand-up, how he's not good, how he's just not funny. But as soon as he gets in there, the whole mood of the room changes. The whole mood changes. And, you know, he's just in there listening, and then people start asking him questions once he's in the room. And he answers them back. He's answering the questions that people have, which I think was a cool thing. I think it's a cool thing. It's one of the cool things about the app. Now, here's where things get a little tricky. A certain young lady, can't remember her name off the top of my head right now, but she was asking questions about a certain joke that Kevin made, referring to his daughter. And he was referring to how he didn't like how his daughter was having whorish ways. He didn't call her a whore. He just said whorish ways. And that was a whole thing, and it became this whole gaslighting thing, and people started to get a little too disrespectful toward the black women in the group for my comfort. So I grinned and I don't want to say grinned and beard, but I sat in there just to see like what, how this was going to escalate, de-escalate, transpire. The moderators of the room, see how they were going to like kind of try to control this conversation. But that didn't work. That just not how that went. This all, a lot of people feel like it blew up in Kevin Hart's face. Kevin Hart had a joke in there, or he had a spill a bit in the stand-up where he spoke on Bill Cosby and how Hannibal Buress, you know, helped bring down Bill Cosby and started the conversation that ultimately, in Kevin's mind, the black community helped bring down Bill Cosby. And the young lady took that as, you know, why isn't it that we were holding Bill Cosby accountable? Why is it that we brought him down? Why is that a negative thing? Why are you defending him? Kevin Hart never defended Bill Cosby. Never, not once. It's not what he was doing. As I said, he stated that like a black man started the conversation that ultimately brought down Bill Cosby. Then it turned into this whole thing about the black community being kind of negative, which some things I did agree with, but I won't get into all of that right now. But Kevin Hart at the end of it all summed it up. It was like, this is marketing. This is my only form of marketing. This is the way I have to do marketing now, is to have these type of conversations and sit in these type of quote unquote rooms with the people and hear the critiques and hear the feedback and hear what you like and what you don't like about the stand up. If you don't like it, cool, that's cool. But this is all marketing. Somebody's in here who's not going to hear, who hasn't seen the stand up, is going to go stream it, which I believe. I believe it was a certain amount of people in that room, a small percentage or a large percentage of people who hadn't seen the stand up. And after that whole verbal altercation transpired, that they would want to go and see what all the hoopla was about. Because I had been hearing that stand-up wasn't funny well before all of this transpired on Clubhouse. But, so I was like, well, people say his stuff isn't funny all the time, and I always end up laughing, crying my eyes out. So let me go and watch it. So I went and watched it. It wasn't his best stand-up. I chuckled. I laughed a little bit during it, but I didn't laugh consistently all throughout of it like I have his other stand-ups. But Kevin was like, this is marketing. I can't do, due to COVID, I can't really market the way I want to. I can't get up and I can't go on a Breakfast Club and I can't be on the talk show that I would normally be on my press run. So this is marketing for me. And for me, that's where he went wrong. Well, one of the ways he went wrong. Like, don't try to come in here and you gaslight these people and people are attacking these women who are trying to get their questions off and speak their mind, and they're being attacked and other people are being attacked. And it's getting real aggressive in here. Granted, nobody was going to throw a punch because, as I said, it's an app on a phone that you're talking into. But don't try to just sum it all up. Well, this is marketing, man. This is marketing. This is all I have to do. This is what I got to rely on for y'all to go and stream my show. Because now it looks like you really just got in there to did all that just so people will go and stream the stand-up. Like, for your own benefit, instead of really trying to hear what the people had to say. And that sucks. And that's what I didn't like about the whole ordeal. Kevin Hart really made himself, really embarrassed himself in that way, and the way he was handling the situation. Instead of trying to control the conversation or turn the conversation a certain way, he just kept going at it, kept going back and forth. And like I said, gaslighting people. And if I'm as rich as Kevin Hart, I'm not doing all of that. I'm not doing all of that. I'm on here to hear what y'all have to say. I'll answer a few questions. But that's it. I'm not getting on here going back and forth with you about something that I know I didn't say. And y'all have this frame of mind that I'm on here to defend the stand-up. And I'm not. Which everybody kept asking, why are you defending? And he was like, I'm not defending. I'm just here listening to what y'all have to say. But Kevin Hart definitely could have handled that whole situation a lot better. And somebody else, he had like some of his close personal friends that tour with him were in the room, and I felt like they should have been on the phone, like, yo, Kev, I don't know if you should be doing that. You got to kind of read the room better, bruh. Like, you can't, like, nah, that wasn't a good thing to say. So, yeah, man, Kev Hart, in situations like that, you just got to do better. Don't go anywhere. We'll be right back. Grammy nominations came out this week. I believe Wednesday was the day that they came out. They always come out on a Wednesday. But Grammy nominations came out Wednesday, and boy, were people upset again. I really don't understand this thing, man. We are literally insane. We are literally insane. People were upset about the best rap album. People were upset that Lil Baby was left out of album of the year. That Roddy Ricch and Lil Baby were left out of best rap album. That no female was nominated for best R&B. It was an all-male category, which was astounding when you think about Teyana Taylor's album that came out. Summer Walker's album that came out. Like, the music that came out, it was just completely overlooked. And I get everybody's gripes. I get everybody's gripe. But my unpopular opinion for the night is the Grammys matter. And I kind of think I did this as now I'm saying that. But the Grammys matter. The Grammys matter to somebody. The Grammys matter to somebody. It matters to those artists that were nominated. I'm not going to sit up here and act like the Grammys don't matter. It's still considered the highest honor in music. And as I was listening to the Joe Budden podcast on Wednesday, the Grammy now came out Tuesday, I believe. Yeah, they came out Tuesday, not Wednesday. I'm sorry. But as I was listening to Joe Budden's podcast on Wednesday or Thursday, one of those days, they called Justice, who is a part of the management group LVRN, who manages and oversees Summer Walker. And Justice was saying he was mad, he was pissed off because as an executive, like, you work so hard and you want to be seen as the best of the best, and you want to be seen alongside the best of the best. And whether we want to agree or believe it or not, the Grammys is still that. The Grammys is still that. They still want that acknowledgement. Now, everybody else is saying, you know, F the Grammys, the Grammys never get it right, are all just music fans. But I've said this before. If I get nominated for a Grammy, if I win a Grammy, I'm not dismissing it. I got a Grammy, bro. I got a Grammy. That means something. And if people still get excited about it. Now, I will say that we can't continue to be upset every single year. So with me saying that, let me change my unpopular opinion. It's not that the Grammys matter. It's that we deserve to be there. And when I say we, I mean the culture of hip-hop, R&B, black music. We deserve to be there and be accurately represented. Like, I get you are picking the albums and the songs that you feel like push the art and the genre forward. But you could have did that with the nominations. D-Smoke is an industry plant. He serves brother of TDE. He was on that show on Netflix. The next thing you know, he's nominated for a Grammy. Like, I don't get it. Like, his album, I knew he had an album out, excuse me, but it didn't have the buzz or catch the ears or the acclaim that the Lil Baby or the Roddy Ricch album. Roddy Ricch's album went number one, and it literally had Selena Gomez and Justin Bieber trying to tell people how to cheat the streaming platforms to make their song go number one. He had two pop stars, like, panties in a bunch to get the number one spot away from this dude. Like, come on, that didn't deserve a Grammy? Not? Like, we deserve to be there. And I'm not tired, but I hate hearing people say, well, that's why we need to start our own. We need to start our own. I heard Joe Budden, I'm saying, we need to call Puff. We need to call Hove. We need to get some people on the phone. We need to get our own. But I'm like, we've had our own. We've always had our own. We had a Source Awards. We had a Vibe Awards. We had Ozone Awards. We have an NAACP. We have a Soul Train Award, which people had gripes about winners and losers in that. So no award show is perfect, but we have our own. We have a BET Awards. We have a BET Hip Hop Awards. Whatever MTV Video Music Award, that's there too, but that's not really reflective of our culture either. But we have our own, and we don't always hoist it up in the best light either. But we have our own, and I'm tired of hearing that we don't need to pay attention to that. No, we work hard in this culture, building this culture, pushing this culture. We deserve that recognition, and we deserve to be represented accurately on that stage. We deserve to be in every space possible. We can be in two spaces, we can occupy two spaces as once, as black creators. We can. It's not impossible. And when it comes to the Grammys, I feel like we deserve to be there more than anybody. Because what black music does is push everybody's genre forward. You got country artists using 808 drums. They wasn't using that 10 years ago. You know where they got that from? Rap. They got that from rap. They got melodies in country music and all in pop music from R&B. They use hip-hop production and all of this. We push everything forward. We deserve to be there. And we deserve to be counted. And we deserve to stand up. And every award deserves to be televised. We deserve to have more people on the Grammy Award that represent us and that look like us. Not the old stiffs that have been there or the people who don't know and that are out of touch. We deserve that. We not even deserve. It's owed to us. So I'm like, yeah, we have our own. We can still celebrate the BET Awards. We can still celebrate the NAACPs, the Soul Trains. We can start a whole new award show. We can bring back the Source Awards. We can bring back Ozone Awards. But we still deserve to be there in the Grammys in that arena. Like, we don't not deserve to be there. I mean, we can be mad about it all year. We either going to be mad and stay mad or continue to be surprised year after year when they show us that they don't care and that they're out of touch. Which one is it going to be? Because you can't have it both ways. We either going to be mad and fight to change it or we just not. We're not going to do nothing about it and just leave it where it is. Because it's getting old, the same thing. Oh, man, they out of touch, man. Who's doing this, man? How you overlook this and that? Like, come on, man. We can't continue to be mad every year. But we deserve to be there, for sure. We deserve to occupy that space and every other space that there is. And that's my unpopular opinion for tonight.
The Breaks Podcast is a production of KTX 989, the Austin Music Experience. You can listen to The Breaks Show live every Saturday night from 10 p.m. to 1 a.m. Please subscribe, rate, and review this podcast on iTunes or wherever you get your podcasts. This podcast is produced by Confucius Jones, Fresh Knight, and Elizabeth McQueen. You can follow us on Instagram and Twitter. We are at The Breaks KUTX, and you can find more episodes at KUTX.org/The Breaks.
Our theme music was written and performed by Austin's own DZ Brown.